People are afraid. Last July, the Associated Press published a survey on fear and the election. They found that 81% of Americans said they would feel afraid following the election of one of the two politicians. This includes a quarter of the people in the survey, 25%, who said it doesn't matter who wins, they're scared of both. Three-quarters of voters say their pick for president is motivated by a desire to cast their Election Day ballot against Clinton or Trump, more than those who say they're voting for the candidate who shares their positions on issues or is most qualified to hold the office. The Associated Press illustrated their story by quoting two voters. Dennis Fernandez, 67 years old, of Florence, Arizona, said, "If Hillary Clinton won, I'd probably consider suicide. I'm definitely not a fan." And Lawrence James, 55, of Durham, North Carolina, said, "If Trump wins, well, we've already checked out Malta and New Zealand. I'm just not comfortable that he's not going to make rushed, uninformed decisions." In the short run, fear can motivate people to vote. Both sides use fear in their ads and in their speeches. However, in the long run, this fear causes people to distrust their leaders. Now, airlines know this. Last week, an American Airlines plane caught fire as it was preparing to take off from Chicago. 170 people were successfully able to exit the plane, and no one died or was seriously injured. In the days that followed, you did not see ads from Delta or United or Southwest saying, "Fly with us because, unlike American airline planes, our planes do not catch fire." Airline executives know that all airlines lose customers when one of them advertises, "We have fewer crashes than the competition." Instead of this, we see subtle, very subtle references to safety in airline ads. One airline said it offered the freedom to come and go with confidence. In contrast, many people running for political office are less subtle, less restrained. From August 19th to September 15th, and this is the most recent that I could find data, 61% of Hillary Clinton's ads attacked Donald Trump. 61% attacked Donald Trump. 31% were positive messages about what Hillary Clinton could bring as president. 8% were what is called contrast ads, where you get first the attack on Trump and then the positive about Clinton. In the same period, Donald Trump used mostly these contrast ads, which promoted himself and attacked Hillary Clinton. While 31% of Clinton's ads did not mention Trump at all and were positive messages about what she would bring to the presidency, Trump aired no positive ads, none. Researchers have found that in the same way that a negative airline ad would cause fewer people to fly, the negative political campaigns lead to a general distrust in our government and a decrease in voter turnout. They also polarize the electorate. Negative ads cause people to become stronger in support of their side and more fearful of the opposition. As a result, each new president is considered illegitimate by the other side. Well, at times like this, how do I calm my fears? My fears about the future for myself, my fears about the future for my family, my fears about the future for our country and the world. Jesus said, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them who use you and persecute you. And in another place, Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. Of course, this approach did not work out very well for Jesus. Still, I think he had a point. As a child in the Unitarian Universalist Church, my minister had grown up as a Quaker before becoming a Unitarian minister. And this minister taught me the Quaker idea that everyone has a spark of divinity in their soul, which, if properly nurtured, could help them develop into sensitive, compassionate persons. Later, something like this became part of the principles of our association. We affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Of course, when I feel very afraid, I temporarily forget to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of the person who is scaring me. Instead, I interpret what that person says or does in negative ways. My tendency to jump to hostile conclusions about people with whom I disagree happens when I am just so caught up in my own fears inside me that I cannot see any potential for goodness in the other person, any inherent worth or dignity in the other person. At these moments, when I'm caught up in my fear, I try to remember that Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. And when I'm at my best, I set aside my fears. And I try to put myself in another person's shoes. I try to see the world as they see it. I have found that it is next to impossible to fear or dislike someone that I know in depth, someone I know from within, as it were. When I really know what their experience has been, what they have seen, what they fear, what they hope, what they wish for, how life looks to them, I am likely to lose my fear and instead feel a certain tenderness, a warmth for them, to care for them, to love them in the best sense of the word love, when I see things from their point of view, from their experiences. However, when I am feeling very afraid, when I am scared, and someone tells me they support a candidate I do not support, my tendency is to think that they are stupid. Now, this judgment of others is easy for me to fall into, but it's always counterproductive. If I tell them I think they're stupid under my attack, they do not respond warmly towards me. In fact, they cease to listen, or they strike back with some name-calling of their own. When I can calm my own fears, I can remember a basic principle that guides my life, something that was actually taught to me by a church administrator in Evanston, Illinois, years ago. She said, Roger, every human being is trying to do their best. She said that to me after I told her how irritated I was with someone on my board. Every human being is trying to do their best, and she's right. Both candidates are ultimately trying to upgrade the life of their people, the life of Americans. They differ only in how they think they can achieve this upgrading and in what they are willing to sacrifice to achieve it. Donald Trump genuinely believes, sincerely believes, that if he is elected president, the United States and the world will be richer, freer, and less in pain because of his actions. His supporters sincerely believe that if Donald Trump is elected, he will make America great again by returning the country to the traditional roles of the past, before there was an African-American president and before there was a woman candidate for president, a return to the way the good things used to be. Simultaneously, Hillary Clinton is also sincerely trying to do the best that she can do. She genuinely believes that the people of America will be wealthier, happier, healthier if she is elected president. Mrs. Clinton's supporters sincerely believe that the nation will be more just, the nation will be safer, we will have a more tranquil country if she is elected. If I can calm my own fears, I can talk with a person who supports someone I do not support and try to understand things the way they understand them. I try to discover what it feels to be like them, to feel the emotional force with which they believe what they believe. And in my head, I think to myself, love your neighbor as yourself. When I calm my fears and listen, I can look for common points of agreement with people who support a candidate I do not support. I can say honestly and frankly that I have some of the same concerns and worries that they have. In my head, I am thinking, love your neighbor as yourself. As a supporter of a candidate I oppose, they are likely to have preconceived opinions about me. They have likely pigeonholed me in their mind and expect me to conform to their oversimplistic views. So I look for opportunities to act inconsistent with their expectations. I have found that the best way to break through the cliches of a political discussion is to sincerely say something the other person is not expecting. If I listen to another person enough, if I show them that I take them seriously, show them that we have some things in common, show them that I don't fit into their stereotype, I may eventually reach a point where they will ask me to make a case for the candidate that I support. When I make my case, I try to show the other person how my candidate's ideas are consistent with their values and their interests. Still, of course, many people hold strong views very different from my own. And it is unlikely that I can bring them around to see the world from my point of view. When I fail to persuade others to look at life the way I do, I need a backup plan. Now, one such alternative to convincing people that my point of view is correct, one such alternative is tolerance, a willingness to respect the opinions of others that are different from mine. It is the capacity for recognizing and accepting beliefs or social characteristics that differ from my own. I hold on to my individual beliefs while I stay in contact with those who hold different views. In the words of the Methodist John Wesley, though we cannot think alike, may we not love alike. Tolerance of others is necessary to preserve our individuality while remaining emotionally connected to a community. Tolerant individuals can think for themselves. They can resist the temptation to merge with the group and agree with the group on everything. Simultaneously, tolerant people can remain connected with others who have different political beliefs. A tolerant Trump supporter can show kindness and good manners towards a Clinton supporter. A tolerant Clinton supporter can be courteous and patient with a Trump supporter. They strongly differ on politics, but their emotional connection, their love for each other as common human beings, that remains strong. The democratic process works best when we show tolerance towards each other. So, of course, there are limits to tolerance. Sometimes walking away from a workplace that engages in unethical practices is necessary. I know some of you have had to do that in your lives. Sometimes leaving a religious community that requires allegiance to a creed that you no longer believe in, that is necessary. And some of you have chosen to do that, to walk away from a religious community that does not represent the values that you have. Sometimes cutting off from an abusive family member is necessary. And some of you have had to do that, to say to a parent or a brother or a sister or even a child, I'm sorry, but your behavior is so unacceptable that we need to separate and not have contact. Terribly hard, but sometimes necessary for your own mental and physical health. Love your neighbor is my goal, but I don't forget what happened to Jesus. It's important to also be safe. This election, people are afraid. They are afraid that they are not going to be safe. Surveys say that the level of fear in our country now is at a 15-year high. And remember what happened 15 years ago. People have not been this afraid since just after 9/11. Patricia Lewis lives in North Idaho. She writes on a blog, "The reason Hillary Clinton scares me is because I've seldom seen someone so infected with the lust for power that it overrides everything else, common sense, fame, fortune, wealth, scandals, even the joy of becoming a grandmother for the first time." On the other hand, Carol Walks is a psychologist in private practice in Manhattan. She recently started seeing an old patient again. The client had first sought treatment for anxiety following the terrorist attacks on September 11th. Now the client was worried about a new menace, Donald Trump and his zealous supporters. The patient, the psychologist says, comes from a family of Holocaust survivors, and it feels to her like all the stories she heard from her grandparents are about how things feel normal. And then all of a sudden, oh my God, here we are. According to the therapist, the election casts a shadow over many of her patients. If I have 7 patients in a day, she says, the topic of the election comes up in 6 sessions. People are afraid. But I refuse to allow fear to control me. Whoever is elected on Tuesday, I will affirm the inherent worth and dignity of others. I will strive to put myself in the shoes of the other person. I will try not to make assumptions about others based on my own fears. I will try not to call people I disagree with stupid. I will strive to remember that every person is trying to do the best that they can. I will try to practice tolerance. And on those occasions when I must stand firm because I am right as far as I can see, I will try to keep my family and my church community safe. On the cover of our order of service is a photo of clouds here in Sarasota. Now, clouds can cause me to feel fear of a coming storm. But they can be so beautiful. They can also cause me to feel love. Love for life. Love for our beautiful earth. Love for our wonderful country. In the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that.